We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Touchdown! Touchdown, Colorado!
From Learfield, this is the CU Buffs Insider. Here's the voice of the Buffaloes, Mark Johnson.
Hi again, everybody. Welcome to the Buffs Insider Weekly Podcast, along with Neil Welk of CUBuffs.com. I'm voice of the Buffs, Mark Johnson. Colorado football team coming off a 27-23 loss at UCLA. All how close were the Buffaloes last week at the Rose Bowl? Now they sit at 0-2 in league play, 3-2 overall. And one of those, I'm not going to say it's a must-win, but it's a must-win this week with Arizona coming to town for family weekend. See what I just did right there? I hedged my bets.
I saw you sneak that in there, Mark. I saw you sneak that in. And it's not a must-win. If you just want to go 6-6, It's not a guaranteed must win. It is a must win if you want Colorado to still be in the conversation as a Pac-12 contender in November. If they want to be in that conversation, they have to win this game this weekend.
And a two-loss team, by the way, I think we'll probably have a shot, and we'll talk more about that, to win the South Division with two losses. So we'll talk more about that. But back to UCLA a little bit. That was a ball game that was a winnable ball game. In many respects, the defense played well enough, holding UCLA 18 points below its season average to win that. Steven Montez, I thought, was good enough to win that ball game. But yet the Buffaloes didn't win that ballgame.
Brilliant. Oh, wow.
That right there is the kind of analysis you get for free every week right here on The Insider.
I have no idea how to follow that up. You're right. They had a lot of opportunities to win that game. That was a very winnable game at the Rose Bowl against a good UCLA team. That was an opportunity they let slip away. Two drop passes in the end zone, a fake field goal that didn't come up with any – that yielded 0 points, a six-minute UCLA drive at the end of the game where they just needed one third down stop to get the ball back, 60 yards in rushing called back by penalties, including a 9-yard Steven Montez touchdown run. Just pick one of those plays. Just pick one of the drop passes in the end zone or the touchdown that's called back for the holding penalty, and it's a different ball game. And that's where this team is, and they got all those plays a year ago. They made those plays a year ago. They haven't shown yet that they can make them this year, and that's why they need to turn that around.
You wrote a piece here a week or two ago kind of about the close losses from two seasons ago in 2015. turned into close wins in 2016. You can recap a little bit of that, but that seems to be – we're trying to figure out what category this team in 2017 is going to fall in.
Yeah, that's exactly it. This team has to be able to make those plays in close situations, those deciding moments, those defining moments in ball games that win games. And if you go back to last year, it's the big Bryce Bobo touchdown catch at Oregon. It's the Kelo Weatherspoon interception at Oregon. It's the fumble recovery against Stanford, you know, on the goal line when Stanford's ready to take the lead. It's the Isaiah Oliver punt return against UCLA. It's the Nick Fisher big plays against Washington State, the Kenneth Olabode touchdown return, I think, against Utah. Just go through and pick all those plays that changed momentum that gave Colorado a win. Five or six games last year, they won on a couple of plays. They need to be able to make those plays this year. Last week they had that opportunity, and it just didn't happen. But that's the difference between winning and losing season, is sometimes just one or two plays in those games.
You know, in obviously coming out of a game like UCLA, and you hear from fans like I do, the fake field goal attempt, which was not successful, is the easy one to kind of pick on. To me, there were so many other situations, the hold and the callback touchdown you're talking about, that really wasn't a hold, is the one that gets me. And then, you know, listen, receivers, you're brought in for a reason. That's to catch a football in a tough set of circumstances, which a year ago they did. And when you're dropping passes like that, you know, but there was the phenomenal pass, and it was a fantastic laser beam by Steven Montez where he found Phillip Lindsay, but he had a couple of other those opportunities where the guy on the back end of that ball didn't hold on.
Yeah, and that's, again, that's the difference between, you know, right now, if you're looking for the difference between last year and this year, there are a lot of different, you know, players, things like that, but last year they made those catches in the end zone. They made those big catches. Last week, Colorado dropped two catchable balls in the end zone. Both of them, you know, would have produced touchdowns, would have given Colorado the lead both times, would have certainly changed the complexion of the game. Did the fake field goal change the complexion? No doubt. Colorado is trailing 14-10. They have a chance to, you know, go into the locker room at 14-13 and get possession coming out of the second half. But there are just too many other little plays in that game that I'm not going to say that was the defining moment. There were just a lot of defining moments. They needed to make one more play. They didn't.
Steven Montez, speaking of making plays, I think, and a few weeks ago we sat on this very podcast and talked about Steven's got to be better. He's making the transition to being the guy and not being a guy that comes in relief. I think it's safe to say through five games, I've seen a better quarterback wearing number 12 jersey out there each and every week this season.
No doubt. I really think he took a big step last week. If you look at the week before, three interceptions against Washington, trying to make some plays, you know, came up short. Last week, he made good decisions the entire game. And, you know, he was 17 for 36, which is not a great percentage, you know, completion percentage. But again, he had three or four drops in that game that certainly up his yardage and up his production if those catches are made. So he also didn't throw any interceptions. He didn't come close to throwing any, you know, interceptions. He made good decisions. He threw it away when he was supposed to. Also ran for 100 yards, you know, and I think that's a part of his game that I really like, especially when they can get him around the edge. The running inside between the tackles, I'm a little, you know, that still worries me. But, I, you know, Brian Lindgren hasn't asked me for advice, so I'm not giving any in that regard. But I do like Steven when he gets around the edge because he's a good enough runner to pick up big yards.
I know Seth Alufau. Seth Alufau is a friend of mine. And you, sir, are no Seth Alufau running between the tackles. You like that?
there aren't a lot of quarterbacks that ran that tough and that hard in between the tackles. And, you know, the flip side of that is I know Seth Alufau, and I know who I like my money on going around the edge. Yeah. You know, yeah. In a foot race, yeah. I'll take Steven Montez. So, no, I think Steven did a lot of good things. Mike McIntyre said it at his Tuesday press conference. Steven Montez played well enough to win that football game. That was not the difference in the game. Steven Montez played well enough to win, and just some other things happened.
This offensive line has got to get better as time goes on. And they continue to shuffle up there a little bit. And we saw, for example, Isaac Miller playing at right tackle the other day and the Longmont product. And I think that may be a good move if that's something they're going to do permanently. But that unit, which is essentially the same group of guys, save for Alex Kelly from a year ago, has got to find a little bit of rhythm out there, a little bit of continuity.
Yeah, and you know, I talked to Clayton Adams earlier this week, and certainly he's frustrated. He's a little disappointed in the way they've played, and he says he's seeing more and more where they're doing things right. They'll run a play. Everything happens the way it's supposed to. And he says that's the way it should happen. Two plays later, something happens, and it's not the way it's supposed to go. And they just have not developed that continuity, have not developed that consistency. I think they're getting closer, and I know that nobody likes to hear close unless we're talking horseshoes. But I do think, and we'll go back to the Arizona game, this is a great chance for this offense to do some good things, develop that consistency, that continuity, get some momentum going, and take a step forward.
Are we seeing the early stages of a guy that may end up being a dynamic player, Laviska Shenault? We talked a little bit about Juwan Winfrey. I said I'm buying stock in that guy. I think I'm buying more stock in Laviska Shenault the more I see him out there.
When Laviska Shenault touches the ball, good things happen. I mean, just good things happen. He had a 40-yard reception last week, and it was only about a 15-yard pass, and he picked up the rest yards after catch. He had a 30-yard gain on a reverse where he actually got around the edge, looked for his blockers, found his way down. That one got called back by a penalty. But when Laviska touches the ball, good things happen. And I just think you're going to see more and more of Laviska Shenault in that game plan and trying to do more things with him because he is going to be a very good player here.
Defensively. They played, you know, I mentioned off the top, they held an explosive offense at UCLA, 18 points below their season average, did not give up 100 yards, or they have 95, 96 yards rushing, whatever it was, and still with the 300-plus yards that Rosen did pass for was considerably below his season average. You come out of that game feeling good about the defense?
Yeah, I did. You know, and again, that last drive that UCLA had took 6 minutes and 15 seconds off the clock. That's when they really needed to step up and get a stop, give the offense one more shot with the ball. But even, like you said, with that, they only gave up 27 points. And in today's college football, that is actually only 27 points. It used to be, you know, that would be enough to win most games. Today it's not. And I continue to like the way this defense is progressing. I like the secondary. I think if you look at the guys back there that are developing, you know, along with Isaiah Oliver, Trey Udofia played well. He got hurt last week. Dante Wigley comes in and plays well. Nick Fisher's playing well off the lobby. Laguda is playing well. I like the linebackers. I think Drew Lewis continues to, you know, develop his game where he's going to be a very good linebacker. He's learning it, you know, as he goes along. So I think there's a lot of positives on this defense, but it's also going to have to make some improvement.
Give me a temperature gauge of what you saw in practice this week. And I bring this up because a number of guys have talked about it. A couple of them did at the press conference on Tuesday. This week in practice was maybe a little bit chippier than normal.
I prefer intensity. No, I think the attitude of this team, they're feeling the same thing that people are talking about. They know they're 0-2. They know they can't afford to go to 0-3 if they actually want to be in the conversation for the Pac-12 as a Pac-12 contender come November. They know they have to win this game. And so I think, you know, you can pick your metaphor. You know, their backs are to the wall. There's a sense of urgency. It's a must win. You know, they all apply. And I think all the players feel that out there. And like you said, it was chippy. There were some heated discussions, you might say, you know, during practice. And you know, coaches to a degree aren't unhappy to see that because I think it means they know those players are getting some intensity built in for this game.
Well, part of it is the fact that when you see that kind of thing, it implies ownership. Guys understand that we're the ones that have got to make the plays. The only thing that was chippy this week is Neil and me having our planning discussion about what we're going to talk about this week. He's kind of mean sometimes. Right? He just yells at me. How about the transition this defense has got to make this week? You go from a pocket passer and drop back, not really much of a threat to run at all, to what Brandon Dawkins is going to bring. This guy can be very dynamic with the football and totally changes from a defensive standpoint what you have to be responsible for.
This guy is actually scarier for defenses in a way just because he can do so many things. He can throw it down the field. He's thrown for 600 and something yards, I think 5 or 6 touchdowns. He can throw it down the field, but he can also tuck it and run. He's their leading rusher. He's rushed for 500 yards and 6 touchdowns. He can do a lot of different things, and so it means you've got to be very disciplined. Last week against Josh Rosen, they knew where he was going to go. He was going to take 5, 6, 7 steps back in the pocket, and he was going to throw it. They knew what he was going to do. They didn't have to worry about him getting outside and running. They had to cover receivers. They had to try and get a pass rush. this guy's a little different. He does a lot of different things, and so in some ways it's a difficult transition. But as Mike McIntyre said, it's one that you see all the time in college football. It's not like pro football where you know every week what the offense is going to be. Mm. This is a different quarterback, and I think they like that challenge. I think this fits Drew Lewis very well. I think this fits his type of game. He's a fast, physical inside linebacker, and I think you're going to see Drew say hello to Mr. Dawkins several times this week.
You know what I love about those two guys inside? And during the radio broadcast last week in the Colorado Football Network, we made this comment with Gary Barnett. That those two inside guys, Drew Lewis and Rick Gambo, are making plays nuts. They were all over the field. I mean, everywhere. They seem to complement each other so well. You got one guy that thinks the game at a higher level. The other one's a freak of an athlete. And they really seem to complement each other inside there and really create a lot of problems for the opposition.
Yeah, they do. And I think I like the way DJ Elliott tries to use them. He tries to use Rick Gamboa in a way that his anticipation is going to help him make plays. And he's going to be a force in the run game. He's going to be that inside guy. He uses Drew Lewis as a guy that can go sideline to sideline, a guy that can chase the quarterback, a guy that can cover a tight end, that can do a lot of different things. And so he's moving Drew around the field a lot. He's trying to make offenses guess where's Drew Lewis going to be. And so I think, I like both of those guys. They're a terrific complement for each other.
You mentioned the tight end, and I bring this up only because he was outstanding to watch, and he's got connections to Chris Wilson's son, Caleb, last week, the tight end for UCLA. Chris, of course, was an assistant coach with Gary Barnett years ago. How fun is he to watch, especially when he's not playing against you?
I look forward to seeing him play the rest of the year. That's an NFL type of tight end because he can block. He stayed in that passing game. He's a good pass blocker. I saw him in the run game. He does all those things well, but he can get open, and he is he's a nightmare of a mismatch for a defense because he's faster than most linebackers. Yep. He's bigger than most DBs. He's got great hands. He runs really nice, precise routes. And, I still like a team that runs that tight end. Mm-hmm. I'm an old-fashioned guy, and I still like that tight end as a weapon. I still remember the days of Daniel Graham, and so, I yearn for those days once in a while.
You heard it here. Neil just announced he's old. Breaking news on the podcast this week. Hey, by the way, the Buffs and the Wildcats will kick it off at 6 o'clock on Saturday night. We're going to hit the air at 4 o'clock in the afternoon with the Buffalo Stampede pregame show on the Colorado Football Network. And by the way, we're going to be joined by former Buff Vance Joseph, the head coach of the Denver Broncos. Being this is a bye week, we connected with Vance, so he's going to join us on the pregame show for a little while. It'll be fun to hear to him reminiscing about his time as a Buffalo. Got any good Vance Joseph stories for us?
The thing I remember about Vance Joseph was I remember talking to him in his senior season. He had not played here. Mm-hmm. He did not play almost at all his entire time. And I remember asking Vance, I said, how frustrating has that been? And instead of saying frustrating, he said it was a great experience. He talked about how much, how important he was to the team, playing scout team quarterback, learning the other team's offenses, doing everything he could to help this team win, being prepared to play, to go in if he had to. And that I remember him very distinctly saying he wouldn't have traded that experience for anything else. He could have gone to a lot of places and played and been a starting quarterback. And I just remember how unselfish Vance Joseph was. He was a guy that really enjoyed his time here, wanted to win. And I tell you what, while he was running those scout team offenses, he was learning a lot of football. He was learning a lot of football back then, and I think you're seeing that kind of manifest itself today.
Well, I asked him, I said, go back to that quarterback room. You had Darian Hagan, you had Charles Johnson, you had Vance Joseph. I said, were you the most likely to become the head coach? And he said, well, you look at that room. He said, I was most likely to become a head coach. Darian was the ultra-talented one, and CJ was the most likely to become a politician. I think he pretty much nailed all of them.
that man saw the future. That man saw the future. He knew exactly what was going on, and he's right. But, Vance was a guy that he knew the game extremely well. I mean, he's a guy that flipped positions, went on and played DB for a while, in the NFL. And so extremely bright, talented. I keep on calling him a kid. I know he's not a kid anymore. I keep on remembering back to the early 90s when he was playing here, but extremely talented young man, and you got to love what he's doing with that football team.
You think about, and fans may not remember this, so he comes here. In 1990 would have been his freshman season, so the year they win the championship, and they're running the eye bone and all that. And by the time he leaves, he's competing with Cordell Stewart and Clay Dettmer in a drop-back passing offense. I mean, talk about a transition that he wasn't brought here to play in.
Oh, exactly. And I remember talking to him about that and said, look at the great quarterbacks that he played behind. Darian Hagan, Coy Dettmer, Cordell Stewart. I mean, these are guys that all, you know, were – you know, terrific college quarterbacks. A couple of them went on and played in the NFL for 8, 9, 10 years. And they told him his sophomore season, oh, by the way, we're not going to be running that eye bone option anymore. We're going to start throwing it. And Vance said, fine. Vance could have transferred. Vance could have been one of those guys that left and said, look, I got to go find a place I can play. I don't think it ever crossed his mind. I think he wanted to be at Colorado, and I think he was very proud of his role here. Of course he would have liked to have played. But I'll never forget talking to him before that bowl game in 94. And he said, hey, I would not trade this experience for anything. It has been, you know, a great, great learning experience. And I remember thinking then, he's a really mature guy. He's going to go and do something and be very successful at whatever it is.
Oh, he's been outstanding. Remember, he did come from a mixed family as well. His brother was a quarterback in Nebraska. So you have that going on within the family as well. Again, Vance will be joining us on the pregame show on Saturday night when the Buffs entertain the Arizona Wildcats. We'll sit down and chat with the former Buff and the coach of the Denver Broncos, who are on a bye week this week, sitting at 3-1 after that win over Oakland last week. Transition a little bit. Basketball started practice this past week. And I know there's a lot of anticipation and probably a lot of questions about Tad Boyle's team.
Oh, there's a ton of questions, but I think it's going to be a really fun season. I'm looking forward to the season maybe more than I have for the last couple of years, just because, like what you said, there's a ton of unknowns. There's all these really talented freshmen. What's that lineup going to be? How are they going to use George King? How are they going to use Torrey? How are they going to use the seniors? How do they fit in with all those freshmen that have come in and played? We're going to see Dallas Walton, who we haven't seen yet, a redshirt freshman. So a ton of questions, and I think it's going to be – I know Tad's excited about this season. You talk to him, and he's kind of rejuvenated, and so I think it's going to be a lot of fun. I really look forward to this season just to see how it unfolds and see what it brings.
By the way, we did get news this past week, if you hadn't heard yet. The Buffs are going to be in the Paradise Jam, and we're all very much looking forward to making a trip to the Virgin Islands. Now, this is one of those situations where you have to step back and say, well, God bless the people down there. They've had just terrible things with the hurricanes hitting there. But in most people's lives, we know that we all exist. The world revolves around us. And so instead of going to the Virgin Islands now for a nice trip, we're going to Lynchburg, Virginia for the Paradise Jam. They might need to change the name of that tournament now that I think about it.
Paradise, Lynchburg. Synonymous, aren't they?
And by the way, when I first heard Lynchburg, I went, well, fantastic. Lynchburg, Tennessee, I can't wait to get there. Got the, but no, Lynchburg, Virginia.
No, and there's no Jack Daniels there in Lynchburg, Virginia. I'm sorry. You've got the wrong Lynchburg there. But
so anyway, yeah, that's the transition now, so that we got to answer that question. So no Virgin Islands for the Paradise Jam. When I think of Paradise, I think of Lynchburg, Virginia. Now, with all the newness out there, give me one guy on that team you think, you say to yourself, with all the new guys and you got guys who had sat out with transfer and red shirts and all the freshmen, give me one guy you think, I want to watch him this season. I'm interested to see what he's able to do.
I want to watch McKinley Wright.
Yeah.
I want to watch that freshman point guard. And I tell you what, I saw in practice this summer. Actually got to see some of the games they played over in Europe, in Italy. I saw some video of that. Have watched him in practice, watched him in pickup games. And I want to see that kid in big-time college competition, because I think McKinley Wright is going to be a difference maker here. I think he is going to be a guy that a lot of people are talking about. I think he has the potential to be an all-Pac-12 point guard. He's just that good, that tough. He just has something about him that makes me say I want to see his game.
Well, he's one of those guys that has got kind of leadership on him. When he talked to some of the alums that came back for the throwback tournament and practice, they all said the same thing. As a freshman, he didn't back down from anybody. He understands the game innately. He's got that leadership quality. I'll give you him, because I was going to say him. I'm going to go Evan Batty, because I think that's a unique creature right there. You don't see many that look like that, that play the sport of basketball and have the ability to pass the ball, the physical presence. So That'll be my guy that I kind of want to watch and see how he evolves a little bit. So it's going to be a lot of fun. Other quick notes real quick. The volleyball team coming off a nice win last week, a couple of them over the Oregon schools, so knocking off the 12th-ranked Oregon volleyball team at the Coors Event Center on the road against the Washington schools this week. And so you're seeing some pretty good things from Jesse Mahoney's team.
Yeah, I tell you what, Jesse Mahoney last year, first year I thought did a really nice job with that team. And I think you're starting to see his system, kick in. And I think you're starting to see they're adapting to it. They're playing the way he wants them to play. And there's some really young players. Brenna DeLuzio, who is a freshman, two-time Pac-12 freshman of the week already. He's recruited well. The system is getting into place, and I think you're going to see a lot of good things out of volleyball over the next few years.
Well, it's a good time. We got everything going on. Cross country's in action again next week. The women's still number one, the men number seven this week, and soccer course is having a great season as well. So a lot of good stuff going on with Colorado Athletics this weekend. We get ready though for another Pac-12 conference contest at Folsom Field, 6 o'clock. It's Colorado and Arizona. Again, our pregame gets it away in the Colorado Football Network at 4 with the Buffalo Stampede. For Neil Welk of CUBus.com, I'm Voice of the Bus Mark Johnson. Thanks for joining us on this week's Buffs Insider.